Speaker of the morning is Lisa DeFeather.
All right. Good morning. Lisa DeVetter, small horticulturist at Washington State University. And today I'm going to take a little bit of a different approach and talk about the development of a decision-making tool for the improved management of root lesion nematode in red raspberry in Washington State. This information really represents about 8 years of research that has been done in the red raspberry system in Washington State. And the individuals that are involved in this research are mentioned here on this slide, Dr. Inga Zazada, who is a research plant pathologist, nematologist at the USDARS Center in Corvallis, Dr. Tom Walters, a research horticulturalist at Walters Ag Research, and then Dr. Jerry Weiland, another research plant pathologist at the USDARS Research and Extension Center. So just to get you up to speed with red raspberry production in Washington State, so our previous speaker, they spoke of red raspberry as a biennial crop. In Washington State, we manage it as a perennial crop. And Washington State is the largest producer of processed red raspberries. In 2016, we produced 36.2 million kilograms from 3,845 hectares. That's about 9,500 acres and about 80 million pounds. The industry is very concentrated in northwest Washington, specifically Whatcom County, which is represented here as the county immediately south of the Canadian border. About 95% of the total state production occurs in that county. And plant parasitic nematodes limit plant establishment and productivity. And with the phase-out of methyl bromide, which is something that growers were really dependent upon for soil-borne disease management and nematode management, the growers really asked researchers to try to develop improved tools for the management of this plant parasitic nematode. So I'm a horticulturalist. This is a horticulture audience, so I want to spend a little bit of time talking about the organism that we're concerned about for this presentation. That's root lesion nematode, or Pratelanchus penetrans, and oftentimes you'll hear me abbreviate it as RLN. This is a migratory endoparasite, so it spends about 70% of its life cycle living and feeding in the root system and about 30% of its life cycle in the soil environment. And then it also has a very wide host range. About 400 plant species can serve as a host for root lesion nematode, making strategies like crop rotation really difficult for raspberry growers to implement for management of this particular nematode. So you're going to see me refer to this slide or this figure numerous times. This is the decision-making tool that we've come to develop, and it stops at various stages in the red raspberry production cycle where producers have an opportunity to implement some type of management technique for this particular nematode. And what I want to highlight is that this research really tried to develop a better understanding of root lesion nematode in the red raspberry system in Washington and utilize that information to really kind of drive information and management decisions. So the first decision that a producer will face is whether or not to replant a field and whether or not to plant in the same site or a new site. And because of the nature of red raspberry production in Washington State, there really isn't a lot of land suitable for commercial production, so very often growers will replant in that same site. The next step is to conduct a soil sample or a root sample to determine what the population densities are in your field and to have good interpretation of those results. And oftentimes we get the question of, you know, soil samples versus root samples. How do they differ for diagnostics? Most growers will be taking soil samples. And so what we look at here on this slide here is the number of root lesion nematodes per 100 grams of soil on the y-axis, and we plotted that against the number of root lesion nematodes per gram of soil. You can draw a line through that, get a significant relationship, although it's a relatively weak relationship. But what it tells us is that, generally speaking, if you have high populations in the soil, you likely have high populations in the roots. But there are some situations where there's outliers, where we have high populations in the roots and relatively low populations in the soil. And so that often can be attributed to sampling time and the ephemeral nature and the migratory nature of these nematodes. That being said, though, we've developed action thresholds, and they're really dependent on soil type. So if you have a sandy loam soil, your action threshold is going to be lower than a silty loam soil, and that much of that is really attributed to how these organisms infest and impact plants based on soil type. So the next step is pre-plant management techniques, and so this is really where a lot of the action happens in the red raspberry system, and where producers have the most opportunity to manage root lesion nematode. So there's various field renovation techniques that can be taken, and really in the interest of time, I'm not going to focus on that in this presentation. And then there's fumigation, which is right now the main vehicle that growers have to manage root lesion nematode. So we'll spend some time first talking about fumigation and some of the things that we've learned over the years with fumigation and management of this particular nematode. So the goal of fumigation is not to eradicate the plant parasitic nematode. It's really to reduce population so that when you plant the plant in the soil, it has a sufficient amount of window to develop a root system that can kind of sustain parasitism later on in the life of that planting. Knowledge of soil type and the population density, which comes from those soil samples, is really important and can inform fumigation practices. And then tarping is a tool that is used widely in other perennial production systems for small fruit, but it's not something our producers use widely, but it can improve efficacy, and that's been demonstrated through trials, particularly the top few inches of the soil profile. And just to underscore the importance that fumigation has in these systems, what I have here are two cultivars of red raspberry in northwest Washington, Cascade Bounty on the left and Meeker on the right. This is a very high-density field, and what you see on the top in non-fumigated plots, growth is significantly reduced, and in some of these plots, there was no crop that was able to be harvested. Whereas in our fumigated plots, we were able to achieve a yield. So for many producers, if they have a high-density field, fumigation really is the only viable option that they have at this point in time to be able to produce a commercial crop. But there's three key decisions that, you know, we've kind of asked producers to think about when they're deciding on a fumigation strategy, if that's the avenue that they pursue. First is what compound to use, how best to apply it, given knowledge of the soil type and the population densities. And then broadcast fumigation or bed fumigation. And for those that aren't familiar, broadcast fumigation is fumigating the entire field, whereas bed fumigation is fumigating narrow strips and leaving the alleyways untreated. So this is a list of the registered fumigants. I don't want to spend a tremendous amount of time on it, but I want to point out that Telone C35, which was the main fumigant that producers were using for nematode control, is broadcast applied typically to a depth about 18 to 24 inches. This is really one of the main fumigants that growers use if they have a nematode problem, but one of the weaknesses is that it can no longer be broadcast applied in these systems due to a shortage. And also, if the producer has issues with other soil-borne diseases like Phytophthora or other fungal nomycete pathogens, this really isn't the material to be using. The other one that producers will use for nematode control is Vapam or Kpam. The breakdown product is a isothiocyanate liberator. This is something that is applied shallower in the soil profile, so depending on soil texture, this might be a good option for a producer to use, but it doesn't have the same efficacy on fungal nomycete pathogens. And then just a few other ones. Picchlor, this is really what a producer would want to consider if they have fungal or oomycete pathogens. Basamid, this is a granular product that our producers typically aren't using because it doesn't necessarily have the same efficacy, but our neighbors to the north are using it. And then Dominus is allele isothiocyanate, like a biofumigant. It has had some good results in some of the trials for nematode control in northwest Washington, but because of the high cost of the material, many of our producers aren't using it. I mentioned a couple of times, and you'll hear me a couple of times more likely mention the importance of soil type. In 2014 and 2015, Dr. Zazada and her student Duncan Crozy did an experiment to look at the role soil type has in fumigant efficacy. So they looked at two soil types in northwest Washington raspberry, a sandy loam and a loamy sand, and they sampled to a 3-foot depth pre-fumigation, post-fumigation, and at planting. And the results really highlight, you know, the role soil type has. So both these fields, or all these fields in the study, were fumigated with Telone. This was a broadcast application about 18 to 24 inches deep in the soil. And for the loamy sand soil, which has about 70% sand, you know, you can see the sampling depth on the y-axis and the number of nematodes per gram, 100 grams of soil. The blue bars represent pre-fumigation, orange post-fumigation, and gray is at planting. And so I wanted to highlight in this slide is that with this deep application of the fumigant, we really miss the nematodes residing shallower in the soil, that as that material was moving through the soil, it off-gassed and really didn't have a lot of efficacy. And so for this particular soil type, we might recommend a shallower applied material like Vapam or Dominus if the producer is interested in a biofumigant. Whereas a soil like a sandy loam, which has less sand content, this particular application was effective at controlling the nematodes shallow in the soil profile. So knowledge of soil type really is important in making some of these decisions. Then I want to talk a little bit about bed fumigation. This is where a lot of research has happened over the years. One of the pros about bed fumigation from a producer standpoint is that Tilone C35, which has a really important nematicide in that material, that favors nematode control. Right now, this is the only way that a producer can apply it because broadcast fumigation is no longer available to red raspberry producers. And also, because you're only fumigating a narrow strip of soil, it reduces the buffer. Some of the cons with this type of approach to fumigating is that if you're using Tilone and you're not treating those alleyways, leaving the alleyways untreated might be an issue for fungal and oomycete seed pathogens if that's the problem in the field. And then also growers cannot make their own raised bed, which depending on the producer can be a constraint for this type of soil-borne disease management. One of the questions that producers had, though, when we started looking at bed fumigation was whether or not leaving the alleyways untreated would provide a refuge for root lesion nematode, and if the nematodes would migrate from the alleyways into the raised bed. And what we found over the years and through some of the research that my graduate student Rachel did on cover cropping in the alleyways found that this wasn't the case. So what you see on this figure here is nematodes per 100 grams of soil, and then we look at population densities over time. What I really want to highlight is the green line and the purple line. Those are both bed fumigated where we monitored populations in the bed and the alleyway, and we really didn't see increased populations over time except, you know, later on in fall 2013. By the time, though, the planting was able to establish a pretty good root system, and it fared better than the broadcast fumigated control that was there. But we don't always see this with Phytophthora or other pathogens. So in this situation, given the nature of how this pathogen moves in the field, what we saw was that if we're comparing bed and broadcast fumigation and the proportion of disease roots caused by Phytophthora rubii, we don't really see any benefit to bed fumigation. And really, that's just due to the movement of that pathogen. And in western Washington, we have wet winters, and this pathogen moves through free water. So having that alleyway untreated can have transfer of the pathogen to the raised bed. Next, with soil fumigation, I wanted to touch on the fact that if a producer doesn't want to fumigate their soils, what are some of the options that they can pursue? Unfortunately, there's not a lot of tools at this point in time for producers that don't want to fumigate. There's been some work done on soil solarization, where heating the soil can suppress populations of plant pathogens and parasitic nematodes. It's found to be relatively effective in southwest Washington and Oregon, where they have a warmer climate, but it's been really challenging to get consistent temperatures in northwest Washington for control of plant parasitic nematodes. However, with some of the new anti-condensing plastic films and some of the research that's been done in Oregon, and there might be an opportunity to look at some of these materials to see if it would increase heat transfer and suppression of nematode in northwest Washington raspberry. Also, we've looked at brassicaceous seed meal in my program. Brassica seed meal is a byproduct of oilseed extraction, and it behaves as a biofumigant in the soil. There has been some promising studies done in tree fruits and strawberries in terms of its ability to suppress plant parasitic nematodes, as well as other soil-borne pathogens. And so my student, Rachel Rudolph, she applied this material at 3.4 tons to the hectare in 2014 and compared it to VAPAM, fumigated at a full rate and a half rate, and monitored populations over time. And unfortunately, she found that nematode populations were the highest in the brassica seed meal treated plots. We could try a higher rate of this particular material, but it's very expensive, $1,800 a ton, and it's also very limited in availability. So our feedback from producers at this stage in time is this really isn't a tool that they consider economically viable. Next, I want to touch on plant material selection and plant health establishment. From a soil-borne or from a disease management perspective, having tolerance or resistance can be really important in managing diseases, but unfortunately for root lesion nematode, we really don't have this option available to producers. And then next is plant health establishment, which is an area where we're doing more research on in my program. What are some horticultural practices that can be done to help promote a good root system that can kind of sustain some level of parasitism? And then lastly, I want to talk about post-plant management options. When we talk about post-plant management options, we're really talking about nematicides that are applied after fumigation. And what we've seen over the years with Vidate in particular is that this is a tool that can be useful in low-density fields for root lesion nematode. So again, going back, knowing the density of your field is really important. And the graphs here highlight that. So we have Wakefield, where Vidate was applied at two dates over time. And this high-density field, this application was really not very effective at controlling root lesion nematode. But if you turn your attention to Meeker, a different cultivar, Raspberry, this was a low-density field, and we had good control of the nematode populations over time with the Vidate applications. So I just presented on a very small portion of the research in this tool that's been developed. If you're interested in looking at this tool and learning more about some of the techniques, you can find it through both of these links. And as I mentioned, this is over 8 years of research that's been done. So on this slide, I just would acknowledge several of the people that were involved in the research, as well as the grower cooperators and the various funding agencies. And with that, I don't know if I have any time for questions, but I'll take one. Okay. Yes. Sure. So the question was weed mat, if it will increase soil temperature. So weed mat is a polypropylene material that's used in high bush blueberry production. We haven't utilized weed mat in red raspberry production, in large part because it would limit primacane development. So we haven't looked at it from like a soil solarization perspective in red raspberry. Sure. So the question was above ground substrate production. In our system, we haven't really looked at above ground substrate production. Was your question, is that an option for producers? What opportunities lie? Sure. Not to my knowledge, not with the Floracane raspberries that we're producing. I think the main driver with that is just the economics of it, making it viable. Right now, growers are still able to, implement some type of management strategy and get some relatively good control without substrate production. But if you have the ability to choose your media and manage your media that way and your soil-borne pathogens, it could be a viable option. Yeah, so the question was, did we look at options for organic systems? So for organic systems, soil solarization is one avenue, as well as the brassica seed meal. And I believe Dominus, that biofumigant that can be injected as a fumigant, there was some interest in trying to get that certified for organic production. But really, we haven't seen very much in the way of effective treatments for organic production at this stage in Northwest Washington. Thank you.